Welcome back to the deep dive. This is where we really try to give you that shortcut to being genuinely well-informed. We take source materials, articles, research notes, and well, we pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge, the key insights, so you don't have to wade through it all yourself. We want to give you those aha moments, maybe some surprising facts, all in a conversation we hope you find engaging. Today, we're diving into something pretty profound, actually. Our main source is excerpts from a piece called When Love Judges, God's Justice in Joshua. And this piece leans heavily on an episode from a podcast called People Who Choose, or PWC. They tackled a really challenging question: why God destroyed the kingdoms in Joshua 9:10. Now, we know this topic, divine judgment, especially in the book of Joshua, it can be tough, really tough for many people to grapple with. It brings up these huge questions, you know, about justice, about mercy, about what it means for God to be loving. So our goal today is to unpack this raw, real story carefully, thoughtfully, and see if we can find a deeper understanding of what it all means, maybe even for us today. Okay, so let's set the scene. Joshua chapters 9 and 10. Where are we in the story? Well, Israel's just had these pretty big victories at Jericho and Ai. And the news is spreading. Fear is definitely rippling through the surrounding kingdoms. They're hearing about what happened. And right into this tense atmosphere, we meet the Gibeonites. And they come up with, as our source puts it, a truly wild idea. Their strategy, it's quite something. It's completely deceptive. They basically stage a whole performance: old clothes, worn-out sandals, moldy bread, pretending they've come from this really distant land. Their goal is simple: trick Joshua into making a peace treaty. And here's the kicker. It works. Joshua and the leaders of Israel, they make a covenant, a binding promise with these guys. And the text notes, they didn't consult God first.
Yeah, and that's where it gets really fascinating, because what happens next is quite surprising. You'd think, once the deception is revealed, which it is, pretty quickly Josh might say, "Okay, deal's off, you lied."
Right. That seems like the logical reaction. You tricked me.
Exactly. But he doesn't. The source really emphasizes this point. Joshua honors the covenant. He keeps his word, even though he was totally taken advantage of. And this isn't just a minor story detail. It points to something deeper. It suggests that for God, integrity matters. Keeping your word matters, even when the circumstances are, let's say, less than ideal, or when the other party hasn't been honest.
That's a really powerful principle. Integrity over outrage, almost.
You could put it that way. It sets a high standard.
Okay, so he honors the treaty. Then we move into chapter 10, and things escalate fast. Five local kings, Amorite kings, they form an alliance, a big one. But interestingly, they don't attack Israel directly. They go after Gibeon, the ones who just made the treaty. So what does Israel do?
They jump in. They come to Gibeon's defense, honoring that covenant they just made, despite the trickery.
Even though they were deceived, they still protect them.
Yes. And this is where things get really dramatic, supernatural even. God intervenes directly. The source describes these massive hailstones raining down, specifically targeting the enemy soldiers.
More deadly than Israel's own weapons, the text says.
Right. And then there's the famous part about the sun standing still, lengthening the day so Israel can complete the victory. It's a total decisive win for Israel, aided by God.
So, okay. We see the deception, the treaty honored, the battle, God's dramatic help. Which brings us right back to that core challenging question the PWC podcast focused on: why? Why would a loving God help Israel destroy these kingdoms? That's the part that understandably makes people uncomfortable. And let's just acknowledge that it's okay to struggle with these parts of the Bible, the battles, the destruction. It feels very different from, say, the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament. How do we reconcile it?
Well, what's helpful about the source material we're drawing on is that it doesn't just brush past that discomfort. It actually offers three, I think, quite powerful truths that help us understand the why behind God's actions here. It helps move beyond just a surface-level reaction. Okay, the first truth is pretty staggering when you think about it. God gave these nations centuries to repent. This wasn't a snap decision. It wasn't arbitrary. The source points back to Genesis 15:110. Way back, God tells Abraham that the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure.
Not yet reached its full measure. That phrase really sticks out.
It does. It implies a waiting period, a period of, well, incredible divine patience, over 400 years. That's generations upon generations having the opportunity to turn away from destructive practices. It shows God's reluctance to judge, actually.
But they didn't turn, did they? What were they doing that was so bad? The source mentions things like child sacrifice, sorcery, idol worship.
Exactly. These weren't just minor cultural differences. We're talking about deeply ingrained practices that were incredibly harmful and, frankly, evil. Child sacrifice is probably the most horrifying example.
Yeah, that's hard to even comprehend.
So the judgment wasn't sudden. It came after centuries of patience. But the point is, God's justice isn't passive forever. Eventually, when wickedness becomes that entrenched and mercy is consistently refused, there are consequences. Then there's the second truth, which connects to the bigger picture God was painting. God was protecting his redemptive plan. This wasn't just about land. God was establishing the nation of Israel for a very specific long-term purpose.
Okay, what was that purpose?
Through Israel, ultimately the Messiah, Jesus, would come. The one who would bring salvation for the entire world.
Okay, so the stakes were incredibly high.
Immensely high. Leaving those deeply corrupt cultures right there, alongside fledgling Israel.
Would have been dangerous. The spiritual poison.
Precisely. The risk of Israel being drawn into those same destructive practices, child sacrifice, idolatry was very real. That would have compromised the entire plan. It would have jeopardized the lineage and the spiritual environment needed for the Messiah to eventually arrive.
So it was judgment for those nations, yes, but also protection. Protection for the future hope of everyone.
Exactly. It's a challenging concept, but it reframes the judgment as serving a larger, redemptive purpose for all humanity, making a way for grace.
Okay, centuries of waiting, protecting the redemptive plan. But wasn't there any mercy shown at all? That seems to be the sticking point for many. And this is where the third truth comes in, and it's maybe the most surprising one for some people. God still showed mercy, even in the midst of judgment.
Right. It wasn't just uniform destruction. The source highlights specific examples. Think about Rahab. She was a Canaanite woman living in Jericho. But because she expressed faith in God and helped the Israelite spies, she and her whole family were saved when the city fell.
Okay, yeah. That's a clear example. And what about the Gibeonites themselves?
The very ones who deceived Joshua. They sought peace, albeit through trickery. And because they humbled themselves and sought that covenant, they were spared. Their lives were preserved, even though they weren't Israelites. They became servants, yes, but they lived.
So even in this difficult story, there are these threads of mercy for those who turn towards God, even imperfectly.
Absolutely. And it aligns perfectly with God's own stated character. The source quotes Ezekiel 33.11, where God says, "I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rather that they turn from their ways and live."
He wants people to turn.
That's his desire. Mercy is his delight. Judgment comes, according to this understanding, only when mercy is persistently, willfully rejected over a long period. It's a last resort, not a first impulse.
Okay, that provides a lot more context. Centuries of waiting, protecting the future, showing mercy where possible. So how do we connect this ancient, maybe unsettling story to our lives, to you listening right now? Joshua 9 and 10, it's not just history. The source suggests it's like a mirror, maybe even a spiritual wake-up call.
Mm-hmm. It really does raise questions for us today, doesn't it? How do these ancient dynamics play out now? The PwC material explored some really relevant insights. The first one is realizing we live in an incredible time of mercy. God's patience today is, well, immense. But we shouldn't mistake that patience for permission. Judgment is still a real aspect of God's character and the moral universe.
That balance again. Romans 11.22 says, "Consider both the kindness and the severity of God." He's both.
Exactly. He's loving and kind, full of grace, but he's also holy, and he takes sin seriously. His patience has a purpose to lead us to repentance, but it doesn't mean he's indifferent.
And thinking about Joshua and the Gibeonites, that integrity piece really stands out. The second insight, integrity still matters deeply to God. Joshua keeping his word even when he'd been tricked. That's countercultural even today, maybe especially today.
It really is.
So the challenge for us, maybe for you listening, is, are there commitments you've made, promises, things you need to honor simply because you gave your word, even if it's inconvenient now, even if the situation feels unfair?
That's a searching question.
And then there's that idea about the Gibeonites themselves. The third insight is kind of humbling. In some ways, we are the Gibeonites. Well, think about our motives when we come to God. Are they always perfectly pure?
Probably not, if we're honest.
Right. Sometimes we come because we're scared, like the Gibeonites facing Israel. Sometimes we're desperate. Sometimes maybe we're looking for a benefit. It's not always out of pure, unadulterated love or devotion. We're often messy.
Mm-hmm.
But the incredible grace here is that when we do come humbly, when we seek him, even with our mixed up motives, he receives us, just like Joshua spared the Gibeonites.
That's a powerful picture of grace, isn't it? He meets us where we are. The final insight is really encouraging, I think. God fights for those who do what's right.
Back to Israel defending Gibeon.
Yes. Joshua honored the covenant, stood up for these people who had wronged him, and then God stepped in supernaturally. Hailstones, mm-hmm. The sun standing still. It's a reminder for us. When we choose integrity, when we stand for justice, even when it's hard, when we walk in obedience, God is ready to engage. He fights alongside us, maybe even for us.
So maybe the challenge for you right now is, what battle are you facing? Where do you feel overwhelmed? Where do you need God to show up, to intervene, to fight on your behalf like he did for Israel? It could be anything personal, relational, professional. Okay, let's try and pull together the key nuggets from this deep dive, drawing on that PwC podcast episode about Joshua 9 and 10. First, God's love is incredibly patient, yes, but his justice is also very real. They coexist.
Mm-hmm. Second, his judgment, when it comes, isn't primarily about destruction for destruction's sake. It's often about protecting a larger redemptive plan.
Right. Third, he deeply values integrity. Keeping our word matters to him, even when it's tough.
Fourth, he receives flawed people, like the Gibeonites, like us, when we sincerely seek peace with him, even with imperfect motives. That's grace.
And finally, he fights for those who walk in obedience and stand for what's right.
Which leads us to maybe a final thought, something provocative for you to take away and consider. Where in your own life might you be, perhaps, subtly ignoring warnings? Warnings from wisdom, from your conscience, maybe even from God.
That's challenging.
And who around you needs to see the integrity of your decisions lived out? Who needs that example? And maybe most importantly, where do you need to consciously invite God's strength, his power, to fight on your behalf in the struggles you're facing right now?
This ancient story, definitely challenging, but also full of profound, relevant truths for us today. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Joshua 9 and 10 and the insights gleaned from that PwC podcast material. We really encourage you to keep exploring these themes, maybe read the chapters for yourself. We hope you'll join us next time for another deep dive.